we get things underway this afternoon by welcoming back to the program from Spectrum Sports 360, our friend John Alba. Hello there, John.
Rich, it is so great to hear from you. You know, I was driving to work today, and I had my Spotify on shuffle, and AC/DC's Who Made Who came on, which, of course, was the soundtrack for Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King's own work. So just how appropriate that I'm returning downtown today.
Well, it's so good to have you with us. How's the job going? How are things down south?
You know, Florida is certainly the Wild West at times. So it's been a roller coaster this year. But, you know, right now I'm healthy. Things are going all right. And all that bubble madness kind of wrapped up here. So we're just plotting out what's going to happen next. Now we're dealing with the fallout of the World Series last night. So.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little baseball as we go. But I wanted to talk because you're a musician yourself, a big Springsteen fan, and people may not know, although I think we've talked about it before, but you've actually shared a stage with Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I have, and it was part of the Light of Day Festival in 2014 in Asbury Park, New Jersey, which is a festival that Bruce Springsteen helped inspire that benefits Parkinson's. I was playing in a band in the Jersey Shore scene at that time. And it's actually funnier. Before the show even started, Springsteen was arriving for sound check as a surprise, and he's pulling up in his big Range Rover, and there's a whole bunch of fans who are crowding around the car. And I happened to be loading in at the same time. And I guess Bruce didn't see me, because as he was pulling in, he came about maybe a foot and a half from running me over. So I've got that on my bio, too. Once almost ran over by Bruce Springsteen. But what an unforgettable experience. And his music has had a profound effect on my life. And having this album out at a time when we've needed it most, man, it's just been awesome.
Yeah, let's talk about the album. It's so good to have him back with the E Street Band, and he's been releasing a lot of music in the last couple of years, but back with the band, sounding better than ever, and I would think for you, especially as a musician, this album is such an homage to not just the E Street Band, but the Castiles, and to musicians in general.
Yeah, and I've always felt once the autobiography came out, that there would be a project like this in the works. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the few that got to see him on Broadway. And it was such an emotional experience. And I feel like that emotion carried over into Letter to You. And the songs feel inspired. Not to say that some of his other recent projects aren't inspired, but I don't feel like they've had the same focus outside of maybe Western Stars. And I don't feel like many of his albums over the last 20 years have had the same focus. And I feel like Letter to You really has purpose, and that has elevated the quality of the songwriting.
Well, I think part of that, too, has to be that this was a true E Street Band collaboration, and apparently at the behest of Steven Van Zandt, that he said, listen, don't do the demos. Come in here, play the songs, we'll get our notepads out, and we'll help you work out the arrangements the way we used to.
And what a treat to see the film. And you did an awesome interview yesterday, and I listened to the whole thing, getting insight onto that recording process. I mean, that was a look at any band. Like if any band put out a documentary like that, I'd be so interested in seeing it. And then the fact that it was the E Street Band and seeing the inner workings of how they actually put something together and the true talent that each of them have and their ability to improvise and bring their true skill set to the table is just incredible. And I listened to the record, and I sonically just hear so many callbacks to the Darkness on the Edge of Town record and the Promise era stuff, especially Letter to You, when Roy Binn is doing that descending piano lick. It is sonically such a pleasant and rambunctious record.
And when Jake Clemens comes in with that saxophone, I'm sure your reaction was the same as mine. For a moment, you went, oh, my God, the big man is back.
Yeah, it was thunderous. And I was glad to hear Jake make his E Street Band record debut, which is crazy because he's been in the band for almost 10 years now. But this is the first time we're really getting to hear him on record. I love the addition and the decision to use the three songs written around the Greetings era. I think If I Was the Priest is truly an epic song, and it's everything that made Springsteen who he is today alongside Jamie Needs a Shooter.
And I love his comment in the documentary when he says, you know, that was my style back then. A lot of words, man.
And he also kind of revealed there that he does have an ongoing relationship with Bob Dylan after spending so many years trying to distance himself from Bob Dylan that he almost to the point where he resented the comparisons. Now he embraced that over the years, and I thought that was really great insight.
The documentary is so beautiful. The decision to do it in black and white, as we talked about with Tom Zimney yesterday, was absolutely brilliant. But for me, the most powerful part of that film are those overhead shots of the Springsteen farm coupled with Bruce's incredible narration.
You almost wish, like, they made that available for insomniacs to, like, try to help them fall asleep, right? Like, you put that on at night, instead of white noise, you just hear Bruce just speaking you to sleep. I feel like that's something I need to try to work into my regimen because it's very calming. And overlaid over all that stuff, I mean, I've passed by his ranch over there in Colts Neck. It's just a beautiful area. And you combine the footage that they're able to capture with the drones underneath his narration. It's just, it is a true work of art.
We're talking with John Alba here on Dantan. Well, the World Series wrapped up last night. I wish it could have gone one more game, would have enjoyed a game seven. But overall, for a weird baseball season, it was a pretty good ending. Some decent playoffs and a pretty good World Series, but some mistakes along the way. I would say let's go with one for each team. Last night was Kevin Cash too quick with the hook.
I think we can all agree that he certainly was too quick with the hook there. There is certainly merit to analytics. There is certainly merit to the ideology that a player sees a pitcher three times through and maybe that changes up their approach at the plate, but he was your ace, and there is still merit in having an ace. He was cruising through that lineup. The Dodgers were scared. They were thrown off their game, and when he came out, it provided an opportunity to open things up. The Rays, their formula to winning this year had been their bullpen, but we've seen it bite. A lot of teams over the course of the past few years relying too heavily on the bullpen, and you hope for his sake that it's not his Grady Little moment.
And on the other side, and I know we're on the same side on this because you tweeted about it earlier today, much as I enjoy watching Justin Turner play, a big mistake for him to go out and not just be part of the celebration after finding out he had tested positive for COVID, but to take off his mask to be part of that celebration.
Rich, it is more irresponsible than a player injecting steroids into their body. It is more irresponsible in a team using a trash can to signal signs. This was one of the most egregious things that we've ever seen on a baseball field. And I know there's going to be some people who say that's recency bias, or people are going to say that that's hyperbole. It's not. We're talking about a virus that has killed 220,000 Americans, and he was confirmed positive. They pulled him from the game, which you could even bring up the point, how did they let him on the field in the first place when there were questions as to whether or not he had the virus in the first place because of inconclusive tests or previous positive tests. He went out there, and not only was he out there, he didn't wear a mask for part of it. It is an embarrassingly bad moment for Major League Baseball. Rob Manfred just put out a statement a few minutes ago as we record this. There's certainly going to be punishment coming, but Major League Baseball did not handle this season well when it came to this testing stuff. This testing stuff was not meant to prevent players from getting sick. It was how to manage it. And the league has to look itself in the mirror. The Dodgers have to look themselves in the mirror. And Justin Turner could very well be signified as a super spreader. Mm. I think this was about as bad of a thing that could have happened because it is overshadowing everything that the Dodgers accomplished.
Well, and now we enter, as somebody pointed out the other day, a pretty dark period in sports. Usually we'd be getting ready to roll out the NBA and the NHL, but all we've got now for a while is football.
Yeah, you know, you've got college football too, and you've got college basketball hopefully starting up next month. Hopefully, right? Like, you still don't even know all the details on that front. I keep cycling back to Sean Doolittle's quote from earlier this year that sports are like the reward of a functioning society. And that was months ago. And I don't think we've made a whole lot of progress in terms of being a functioning society since. So So we obviously all want sports. We want those jobs to be out there. We want these athletes to get a chance to do what they do and entertain us for a living. But I'm not willing to sacrifice well-being in the process for that.
Well said, indeed. John Alba, good to catch up with you, my friend. Always enjoy talking with you. We'll do it again before too long, I hope.
Certainly. Miss all you guys up there, and hope you're all staying safe.
All right. Thank you, John. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
John Alba with us here on Downtown. If you're not following John on Twitter, do it. He's great. Smart guy who, as you learned there, if you didn't know already, he got a lot of interest and knows a lot.
Yeah, I miss him. I always liked when he's around here. And a couple of times when he came to the studio when we were in a different location, it was always fun to be
smart guy, creative. Need more of those people in sports journalism.
Yes, we do.